Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, the WWDC 2014 special.
Manton, the silence at the end of the WWDC 2014 opening keynote was palpable in the room where I was sitting at Twitter HQ on Market Street, probably about, I don't know, 200 people in there, 100, I don't know.
They were all stunned. They didn't know what to do.
It was kind of like that. So did you watch it with a group or?
A small group, yeah.
Uh-huh. And was it a similar kind of reaction?
Same thing. It was just, I mean, it was such a good keynote and then they just knocked it out of the park at the end. And I think, yeah, it's been an hour now at least, maybe longer since 2 hours since the keynote ended. And I'm still kind of stunned. It was a big one.
It was it was like one of those where you're like, some years you're like, okay, come on, the time is running out. It's almost like been 2 hours and we haven't really gotten anything good. Mm-hmm. And this year it was like, wow, we already got so much good stuff. We could just seal this thing up, and then there is one more thing, actually.
Right, a new programming language.
Oh yeah, and I'm just imagining all the whole time that I'm watching this thing. I'm just imagining John Siracusa sitting there.
Oh, man.
Watching John Siracusa's wish list getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, and he nailed it. Everything that he hoped they would start working on, they did it. It seems like if that one slide that I read, I'm now an expert on the programming language, of course that's not true, but yeah. It happened. I did not think of the John Siracusa wish list items. I thought a file system replacement was going to happen before this, but no, we got something new with language.
And on Twitter, John tweeted about the fact that they even said Objective-C without the C.
Right.
And I think that was his line. Mm-hmm. It's obviously it's the kind of thing two independent people could come up with, but
sure.
It sure sounded like, this must have been hard for Apple because this is, it's hard. I know from experience inside Apple that it is hard to know something about the future and be enthusiastic about it and be excited about it the same way that we're all excited now that we've heard stuff in the keynote and not be able to share that information with people. It just must have been especially hard for anybody who was listening to the Accidental Tech podcast. When they're just like, oh, John, please just wait a few. Just come on. Give us a few weeks here.
Right. So we're starting at the end of the keynote and working back, which I think is fine because that's fresh in our head and it's a huge thing. But the Objective-C without the C is a really interesting line because it sounds great and it is the future and it's what John and lots of other people wanted, but it also is not really true. I thought that it would be more like Objective-C than it is. It's not, in terms of the language itself, the syntax and what you see, not under the hood necessarily, but we don't have, there's no brackets, right? There's a lot of new keywords, a lot of new language features. I really thought that if they did this, it would eventually be more like an Objective-C 3.0.
Right. Or like
there's no C. You can't write all over your own memory and just crash your app and you do bad things, but you still have brackets and the basic syntax. But no, this is completely different.
Yeah. Well, it's somebody had fun with this, I think. And I haven't had time to, we basically left the keynote, got some lunch and are now recording from our respective hotel rooms. This is true, folks. Even though Manton and I, for a change, are actually located within probably 500 feet of each other, we are recording over hotel Wi-Fi through Skype because we just can't stand each other. We just can't sit in the same room together.
The funny thing is I haven't seen you in person yet.
No, I know. I had some people report Jesus sightings, though. To me. So they've confirmed to me that they have seen you. But
people are having fun with that. And without question, everyone has said, I do not look enough like Jesus. So I have to work on that for next year.
Isn't there a Killers song? Doesn't look a thing like Jesus. But I'm going to get your theme song now. Watch it now. Here he comes. He doesn't look a thing like Jesus, but he
Well, so let's work back a little bit. The keynote had a bunch in it. Obviously, iOS 8, lots of new stuff. You know, new macOS 10, 10.10. I guess they didn't really stress the number much. They talked about Yosemite, but I assume it's 10.10. And it looks like a solid release. As a Mac user, you know, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, you were excited about today.
Yep.
What'd you think?
Oh, I was really relieved to see, first of all, the UI, because I was starting to freak out a little bit. I said on Twitter the other day, you know, I've been excited about the prospect of a refresh of the UI. And then it occurred to me, oh, no, what if we lose like all button borders? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, everything is just text links or, you know, something. And I was like, oh, I've been enthusiastic here without thinking this through. And then, you know, as a longtime Mac fan, I think I sort of always live in fear that one day they're just going to step one step in the wrong direction, as far as I'm concerned, and then I'm going to be like a man with a passion for an operating system that doesn't exist anymore. You know, and I'll be one of those weird guys who's like, no, I'm just going to keep running, you know, Apple 2GS forever. And luckily, the way Apple has evolved macOS 10 so far over the years has been, really, for the most part, it's agreeable to me. Like, I never have wanted once to go back to a previous release of macOS 10.
Right.
And I know there are some people out there who have felt that way, you know, and there's people who have like dug in on releases like 10.6, I think was a pretty popular one to stick to for a while. And I've never been that way. I've always thought that whatever new release came out, it was sufficiently advancing the OS that I wanted to be right there with it. And I, you know, we didn't see a whole ton of the UI, but what I saw on the projected display at Twitter HQ, I liked more or less. You know, it looked like it would take getting used to, but I more or less liked, and it looked to me immediately better in many ways than what we have now in Mavericks.
Yeah, and they kind of, it seemed like they took the best parts of iOS 7 and not the worst. So the translucency and the blurring and some of the nice subtle effects with blending in the background and the desktop pattern, like some just really nice visual polish and improvements, but not a lot of the controversial stuff in iOS 7. Yeah. Like you said, not the no borders, not buttons don't look completely different. You know, font change, the translucency, like fair, obvious change. And I know once you've used Yosemite for a week, you're going to go back to Mavericks if you have to. And you're like, oh, that's no good.
Yeah.
But it'll feel, I think on day one, when you upgrade, it's going to feel right. And it's, you know, just a nice evolution. It's not crazy. Now, of course, from an app standpoint, I don't know what it's going to take. We'll know soon. We'll know this week, obviously, what it will take to support this. But I assume, like iOS 7, using more of the, you know, having content go up and type, you know, in the navigation bar and at the top of the screen, I assume that kind of stuff will be opt-in and there will be some app kit changes to support that stuff. And we'll know fairly soon if that's going to be a pain or if that's going to be a fairly simple transition. I have a feeling it'll be somewhere in between.
Right. Well, you know, the UI is generally agreeable to me. The one thing that stands out to me is like crufty is that, and they kept celebrating it, and I kept kind of groaning quietly to myself, is that visible scrolling of window content translucently behind the title bar. I just don't like that. I'm going to put my foot down about that one. Apple, we need to have a talk about that.
I like that, and I think it works well on iOS 7. I think it'll work well on the Mac. The thing that I am doubtful about, and this is a trend that has started a couple years ago, and now it's complete, I think, with this version of macOS 10, a trend that started in Apple apps and third-party apps, I should say, is the loss of the title bar. It used to be a window title bar had a couple little buttons for closing, you know, the window and zooming in and whatnot, and a title, and you could drag anywhere in it. Slowly, we've been losing that, where the window title bar is actually the toolbar also. And so the amount of space you have to click and drag gets smaller and smaller. And I think that is a usability problem, and we'll see when we use some of these new built-in apps if it's significant or not. But that's the part that concerns me more than the fact that the content can shine through.
Well, you know, overall, I'm really upbeat about this. The Mac stuff that they showed, and in part, it's because this was another year when they really demonstrated their unabashed sort of enthusiasm for the Mac. Right? They are they're clearly not viewing the Mac inside Apple as a legacy platform. You know what I mean? And for a long time, people have been asking or predicting, like, how is Apple going to sort of like unify the Mac and iOS? And there's been sort of like some people who just assume one day we're going to have this single single OS, and it's going to be, you know, something that has touch and can handle mouse clicks and hovering, but, you know, it can have windows, but it can also be full screen, all this and that and the other thing. And that's not the direction they're going. But in this keynote, we really saw an example of how, with all the the ability to like easily go, you know, your data goes from the Mac to the iOS and
continuity,
right?
Yeah.
So they're showing how they can make the experience of owning and using a Mac as a peer to iOS devices feel sort of like the same platform, even though the OS, you know, is significantly different. And I saw while I was watching the keynote, John Gruber had a pretty good observation, I thought, which is to contrast that with Microsoft, because Microsoft has been going for what people assumed Apple was going to end up at, which is the one OS to power all your devices. And John says, you know, briefly, Microsoft, one OS for all devices. Apple, one continuous experience across all devices. And that's what they were showing off in the keynote more than anything. And it's like, who cares? We don't need, you know, the same user interface OS for these two different, you know, dramatically different platforms. But it is huge to be able to say, oh, I started writing an email on my phone, and now I'll just pick up and complete that on my Mac.
Yep. And I think that day to day, that one improvement or that series of improvements that are kind of branded as continuity is going to have a huge, it's just a nice improvement over day to day use of these platforms. You know, even simple stuff like, yeah, you're browsing a web page on your Mac and then you switch to your iPhone and then, you know, drag up and that their web page is right there. It simplifies so much of the kind of workflow of moving between devices. I think it's going to be really good. I still think, I mean, you mentioned Windows. I predicted last week, didn't really predict, but I commented on the rumor that we're going to have iPad side-by-side apps. Nothing like that was shown or announced at all. I'm surprised and disappointed a little bit. I still think there's a lot they need to do, or even just a little bit they need to do with that. But they did show an interesting thing in Mail where you had a modal window, the Compose window, and you could kind of slide it down and access other parts of the app.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting interaction. And maybe it's kind of a hint of maybe there's a way to expand that in the future, iOS 9, to multiple apps. But the idea that, because I think iOS has traditionally had a problem of dealing with modality where, you know, you slide up a sheet and it's modal, and then you're in some other view and it's modal and modal, modal, and you're stacking views on top of each other. And we need to slowly get away from that. And maybe that is the path toward multiple apps side by side as well.
Right. And what was the, open doc for iOS, technology? It's like a plug, you know, had like the cube with all the plugs. I'm sorry, I'm spacing on all the terms that they used, but what was it called? Do you remember the, It allows you to provide functionality from one app to another app.
I think they called it extensions, extensibility.
Extensibility. Okay. Yeah. I wonder if that plays into that too. You know, in the long run, you get the idea that it's like, okay, you have this ability, because really, like, you know, like last week we were kind of talking about this, and I said, you know, you could imagine an app that lets you read mail and use Twitter as a dedicated app. So that means Apple can come up with a way to make that app look good. But maybe this is finally going to be like OpenDoc, and we're going to have a situation where Apple does provide the shell for these kinds of experiences, but it's not as crude as people have been assuming. People, I think, have been assuming that we're going to have a situation like Microsoft adopted with, you know, just like a split screen and two apps each control half of the screen. maybe it's going to be more like this is your auxiliary view, and you can ask that another app, you know, has its particular specialized, you know, auxiliary plugin view there. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, you could imagine then an app that lets you read mail and have whatever, you know, auxiliary view. It's not like splitting apps per se, but it's like an augmented UI.
Right. And it's, I think the comparison to OpenDoc, although technically it's probably not even close to similar at all, I think it's fair in that it is kind of, the extensions are often sort of editors or actions that work on data in an app versus like completely separate activities that have nothing to do with each other. For example, like my example last week of watching a streaming basketball game and chatting with someone, those are not related in any way. They're not connected, but you still want to do them at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this, you know, this, people keep saying inter-app communication, we need more of this. It's a step in the right direction. Hopefully they can, the modality kind of problem, they can slowly fix that as well.
Yeah.
Related to sharing also, I thought that iCloud Drive was kind of a big shock for me because I always thought that the limitations on iCloud that are so frustrating, the fact that they're stuck inside your app and you can't sync or share between apps, I always thought that that was just done. That's how Apple saw the world. But
yeah,
this is document, so it's not necessarily all syncing, but it's certainly a step away from the approach Apple has had up until this point, which is no file system. Now we kind of almost do have a file system with this Drive stuff. So how apps can use that to share data back and forth is going to be really interesting.
And correct me if I'm misunderstanding this, but doesn't this mean that non-Mac App Store apps can effectively take advantage of iCloud now? Because if it's
I have no idea. That's a really good question. They did say that it was going to be on Windows, so I don't know related, but that's a great question.
It's a great example of Apple clearly being somewhat contrite in their response to criticism about iCloud. Because you're right, it looked like they were saying, it's like they took a stab at the idea that they could change the world, the world's approach to file storage, right? They took a stab at it. They said, no more file systems, basically. This doesn't feel like something that they were planning on getting to all along. It feels like something that they corrected the course for, right? And so,
agreed.
And then the way that they phrased it, it was sort of emphasizing the fact that you could have your, what did he say? He said you could have them in a folder organized however you like, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, that's, and then didn't he say something like, see, I don't know if it was right at that point, but he said, see, folks, I do read your email or something like that.
I think that Tim Cook said that in response to something else with the App Store.
Oh, I was thinking it was Craig, but yeah.
But you're right, though. It, as we talk about it, it feels even more like a complete reversal of course. When you say iCloud Drive, it sounds from a marketing kind of standpoint that it's just an evolution of what they've always had. But technically, it's a huge change from the way iCloud was before. And, yeah, you know, when we play with it, we'll see if there's limitations in there. But, I think it's only a good thing. Yeah. The more open that stuff can be between apps.
All right, folks, we are here at WWDC and proud to be sponsored by Crashlytics, our old friends at Crashlytics, who make a brilliant crash reporting framework that is so easy to integrate into your iOS and now Mac apps. You just download their great little helper app, actually, that guides you through the process of installing the framework. Every time you successfully pass a step of integrating it with your framework, it advances the tutorial along, makes it real easy to get it up and going. Next time you build that into your app, make a public release and your users run it, and if they're so unfortunate to crash, they will cause a report to be immediately submitted to Crashlytics, where you can review your crashes with a beautiful web interface. And, you know, last time we talked about Crashlytics, we were excited to share the news about their Mac support, and they've got just news coming out, you know, a steady stream of news coming out, and the latest is that their beta testing tool is now out of beta. So beta is out of beta at Crashlytics, and it's just an all-new beta testing system that if you're already using Crashlytics, or even if you're not, it's a great tool that lets you enlist people to help you test your apps and get them onto their devices, et cetera, before you submit to the Mac app or to the App Store. So, Manton, you've actually used this beta testing tool a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, I used it while I was in beta, trying it out on an app. And, you know, we talk a lot about how Crashlytics has a real slick kind of web interface. And I knew for crash reporting and filtering, and I knew when they did beta stuff that they would probably provide their own kind of, you know, nice design, slick kind of spin on it. And they did. And so you might imagine that you do a build and you find like the .ipa file and you upload it somewhere or whatever. No, that's not how it works. You do an archive and Xcode, and Crashlytics sees that and says, hey, I see you just did a build and archive. And you probably want to send this to beta testers. Do you want to? Yes. And then it sends it off to your beta testers. So the integration with Xcode is very slick, and it's sort of, it just hides some of the complexity of having to deal with betas, right? You know, you just do a build, you say, yes, I actually want to send this, and it prompts you for the release notes, you paste them in or type a couple things, and you're done. You add your beta testers, your email addresses, kind of in the same interface. So just a really nice job the way they designed this. And I think, you know, you could say, well, that doesn't really matter if it looks great and is easy to use, but it does, because you want to be sending betas to your testers fairly often. You don't want to overwhelm them, but you want it to be easy and just no friction. And so just making the process smoother will just make the whole beta testing process go better.
Yeah, you know, as you were saying that, Manton, something that came to mind about Crashlytics that I think is one of their great, great strengths is that they make tools for developers that never assume that the developer wants to exercise their undoubtedly high skill for, you know, figuring things out, right? For a lot of developer oriented things are like, you hear people say like, well, all you have to do is run this command line tool and then code sign dash DVV and then, you know, pipe that through sed and doc and you'll be up and running. And what Crashlytics does is they make these tools that assume developers have better things to do. So I really appreciate that about them, and it's great to see them tackling, you know, additional types of tools now with this beta testing tool. So folks, if you haven't checked it out already, it's, as we said, out of beta. So go check it out at Crashlytics.com. And thanks so much to Crashlytics for continuing to support the show.
So you last week, you and Marco had posts about filing bugs, and we don't need to go into detail on that, but I will say that I file very few bugs with Apple. But one I did file a couple years ago was allow screencasts in the App Store, because just a few screenshots is not enough if you don't have demos for the user to understand the app before they buy it. Allow some videos. And
yeah,
I filed that. It went into the, you know, radar void and never heard back on anything. I didn't expect Apple would ever do it. They've done it. With iOS 8, the App Store, there's several changes which we can talk about, but I think having video previews for your app is a huge one.
I think so too, but it's so disappointing to me that they put the effort into doing this improvement and that it doesn't include some kind of trial system. I really want that trial system, Manton.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. I didn't think this would happen either, but trials, that's maybe even too far.
What's the problem with trials? Why would Apple not want to do it? Because they'd lose the impulse buy.
Yeah, because it would completely change the dynamics of how the App Store works. It would be a huge, I mean, it could be great, but it would change everything about how apps were built and marketed.
Yeah, they'd be better.
Probably, but it would be a huge risk. And so I don't think Apple will do anything that would risk upsetting the, you know, for all the problems with the App Store, it does make a lot of money for some people and for Apple. Yeah. And so I think, I mean, I'm with you. I think it would increase the quality of apps, but it would just be such a huge change to how apps were purchased and how they were built and priced.
It would be a move in a direction that Apple typically moves in, which is to prioritize user integrity and honesty with, you know, I know I'm hearing some people laugh at me right now. Apple's, you know, on it, quote unquote honesty, but they are essentially they withhold a lot of information, but they tend to be upfront about the things that, you know, the things that they sell to you. And anybody who's being protected by anybody whose profits are protected by the current status quo of the App Store, where you have to pay before you could even try an app, those people deserve to lose their revenues if switching to a more honest, you know, system would hurt them.
I think that's true, and I feel bad in some ways that so much of the way apps are bought are, you know, it's like you're paying just to give the app a shot, and it does seem kind of dishonest in a way. And that's one of the reasons with my app Sunlit, I wanted it to be free to try, pay $5 to unlock all features. And I think that also is part of why Apple will never do the trials, is that they have with in-app purchase kind of a way around this, where for some types of apps you can use. I mean, it's not
the same. You're killing me, Manton.
It's not the same, but it can, like, for, let's say, Marzetta for iOS. Let's say it exists.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You
yeah,
could have
yeah, right.
a free download that you. I'm not giving you a hard time about that.
I'm just saying
that type of app, you can't do a 30-day trial, but you can do you create only one blog instead of five blogs unless you pay a certain amount of money to unlock the full feature. So some types of apps you can use in-app purchase, and it's just as good as a real trial.
You're right, but I'm sorry. Let me just say quickly, if that's the path forward for the kind of integrity that I'm looking for the kind of like upfront forthrightness with customers that I think the platform needs, the App Store needs, if that's the way forward, then eliminate completely the notion of paid upfront apps. If that's the case, then force every developer to adopt the in-app purchase, because it will reveal all the warts of that solution if everybody is forced to do it. But there's just something wrong with the system we have right now, where it's impossible for anybody to, you know, actually try the software unless they're savvy enough to figure out that a particular developer has. Well, on iOS, it's just impossible, right? I mean, that's the bottom line. So I just think that this is a spot where Apple's values are not being fulfilled. Apple's values are to give customers the information and let them know, you know, just look at the fact that Apple's like generous return policy, for instance, on hardware, right? Like you go in, you buy something, you buy a MacBook Pro, you take it back home, you use it. 13 days later, you decide, it's not really doing it for me. Take it back to the Apple Store, and you get all your money back.
Mm-hmm.
Those values are not reflected in the App Store. And you can get refunds for purchases, but it's a hassle, and they're not technically guaranteed. It's the opposite of the way Apple usually treats customers. Not the opposite, but it's not consistent with it.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess there's so many improvements to the App Store with this announcement at this keynote that I'm having trouble saying it's not enough, because it's more than I thought we'd get.
The
video previews, I think, is really, really big. It's the next best thing except for trials, and it may be even better, because it's not better in the way you're talking about, but it's better in that it is not as big of a risk to Apple and sort of the ecosystem of the App Store. And it will weed out junk apps just having the video previews, because you can lie in a screenshot in a way that you can't lie in an actual demo of the app and it's being used. Of course, we'll see what the limitations are there. One of the questions I had immediately was, is audio allowed? Like, could you have some me, you know, talking about how my app is, or does it need to be silent, more like just a moving screenshot? I don't know. We'll find out. But there's some other improvements here at the same time. They talked about better search. So one of the common complaints with the App Store, this left to right, you can only see one app at a time when you're searching. That's been improved, this vertical scrolling. The app bundles is a huge pricing change, where you could, if you have a couple apps, you can bundle them together and the user can buy them once. And this is good stuff. I like the whole kind of related search and like showing editor's choice, just trying to highlight better apps and kind of improve the quality of apps that the user's shown. These are all good improvements.
Yeah, you're right. I went off on a little bit of a rant there. I don't mean to take away completely from all the great advances that they've made. And it's another example, I think, that they have clearly been listening to developers. Either they've been listening to developers, or it's just so damned obvious that everybody is, you know, that everybody in Apple has like been wanting the same types of changes as we have. One other thing worth mentioning, Manton, is, you know, we highlighted Crashlytics in the sponsorship statement. There's other beta testing tools out there like Hockey. And Apple, several months ago, or at least a few months ago, right, acquired TestFlight. And lo and behold, it's funny the way they announced it in the keynote. It was like a brand new beta testing service called TestFlight.
Right.
And well, it's from Apple now. So it's
yeah, and it's kind of, I feel kind of bad for the TestFlight guys in a way, because they didn't get credit. Like, if you didn't know about TestFlight, you would think this is a brand new feature Apple developed in-house. Versus, and normally I wouldn't notice that, but compared to the way the Beats announcement was handled, which Beats got all the credit. Their team is amazing. Dr. Dre is amazing. The curation and Beats music is amazing. Like, they gave so much credit to Beats in the acquisition. And when this, they didn't even acknowledge that they had bought a company.
Right. And it was weird. It was weird that they didn't acknowledge it, because it was like everybody in the room, everybody watching on every stream knew that TestFlight was not an in-house, quote-unquote, new beta testing solution, right? Yeah. And it's one of these weird things where it's like, you know, even if they had just – Apple has been doing this more and more where they don't change the name of the thing that they buy. Like, they didn't change Siri's name when they bought it. Yeah. And if they just changed the name, I'm not saying they should have, but it would have made more sense for them to say an all new, you know, they would say an all new beta testing system called, you know, SnapTest or something. And, but you know, it's interesting. This is, there was talk during in among the people in the room afterwards about like the various things that are quote unquote Sherlocked about, you know, what is Apple now competing with, and or like, you know, some people fear maybe putting out of business. And this is another example, though, where I feel like, come on, it's Apple. Like, the third party beta testing tool makers are always going to have their fingers, you know, more on the pulse of the developer community than, or at least maybe that's not fair to say about Apple, but they're not. Apple will never respond as quickly to the impulses of the developer community. And I really think that this is great for, as with so many Apple built-in things, it's great to have a baseline of functionality that draws people's attention to what can be done better, you know? And so it's just, it is a great new feature. And you're right. I wish there were trials in this, in the announced today, but a lot of this stuff is going to really improve the average ability of developers across the board to do a better job of selling their apps. And I'm really hoping that that I'm kind of skeptical, but I'm really hoping that that search improvement pays off. And I mean that literally, because I really hope that basically all the people who make apps for the App Store that are genuine and good, that they start seeing more revenues, you know. When are they going to ship that search thing? Is that immediate, or?
No, I think that's an iOS 8.
iOS 8. Okay, right. So it's on the device iOS 8, right?
Yeah.
I hope that that means that when iOS 8 comes out, all these great developers who deserve to be found and deserve to have their apps purchased, that they just start making more money. And that would be, you know, that would be something that I would be willing to suspend my desire for trials. To have all these people get a little bit more money in the meantime.
That would be great. And yeah, maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll hear from people. Because I know when they changed the search before, some people did complain that like, ouch, my sales are dropping because whatever tricks I was using before, or however lucky I got with my keywords, or the fact that I was just the third hit and not the first, like my sales are going down. So maybe this will boost it back up. And there's a lot more they could do. I've thought, and I wrote this post related to Beats music and curation, that they should kill the top 20 list, the top 100 list, get rid of that or bury it, and focus on just showing the user great apps. I mean, you can find anything and you can link to anything and you can search for anything, but yeah. The discovery interface should be all about editor's picks and apps that are high quality, stuff they feature right. in the commercials, whatever. And so there's some of this in here. Like they talked about not just like this kind of flat top list of categories, but even subcategories that are going to be exposed in the search. But until you go to the next step of killing the top list as one of the very first things you see when you use the App Store app, it's not going to be quite enough.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. They got to do something about getting that the supremacy of those top lists. Is just it's another thing where it's kind of trashy, right? It's kind of mm-hmm. kind of dishonest, and it doesn't live up to Apple's core values, I think.
Right? Because I mean, yeah, from their perspective, like they can't be happy that there's so much screen real estate in that app devoted to apps that they would absolutely never feature ever. Like yeah. that can't feel good for them. So they should get that stuff out of the way and make, when you launch the App Store app, it should be stuff they're proud of.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And it should be in that sense, it should be the experience of opening the App Store app should be a stark contrast to other platforms.
Exactly.
That don't share those values.
Exactly. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out. I'm excited though. I'm not gonna install iOS 8 immediately. Because I got burned a little bit with iOS 7. I had a failed iCloud backup and lost a couple things. And I installed it on my main phone too early. But maybe I'll put it on my iPad next week when we're back home.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening this week. I think it's going to be a great WWDC to remember. And I know there's so many people, this is their first WWDC. Tim Cook said 70%. People at the conference have never been before, which seems like a huge, huge number. And so I know those guys, if you're listening and you're one of the 70%, you're going to have a great week. I know it's going to be fun for the rest of us too, watching what's going on. And there was, even in that intro, there was a couple things that I liked. I liked that they mentioned the 70% because I was curious what the makeup would be. And I also like that Tim Cook gave this kind of little shout out to old school WWDC where he mentioned the first WWDC was in 1990 and they talked about System 7. And I thought that was just kind of a neat, things I didn't expect Tim Cook to say. Like if you have the WWDC bingo card, like System 7 wouldn't be on the list.
Yeah, that was great. And then I was a little interested to hear him say that there were 6,000 developers at WWDC because I think most of us have been working with the 5,000 number, and it made me wonder did they somehow squeeze a few hundred more people in this year, or has it always been 6,000? We've just been wrong. I don't know. So, but anyway, there's obviously a lot of people here. The 70% number, like you said. That made me wonder. Like, does that mean that they somehow selected four first time attendees? I don't think so. I think it was like an honest lottery, more or less. But it probably means that the total number of people who entered the lottery were, disproportionately heavy towards people who'd never attended before. So that's good. I'm glad those people get a chance to go. And honestly, I think they're the people who should go more than anybody else who's gone even once. So that's all good news. And Manton, we had a lot of fun here talking about just the stuff we've learned in the keynote. We're going to learn some more actually right now or very soon because we're starting to miss the State of the Union, which is also streaming. But we have stuff we can still talk about from the keynote. We're going to have a lot of new information from the State of the Union, I bet, and who knows what other information will come out. Usually little news releases happen throughout the course of the week. So we'll have a fun time, I think, next week catching up on all of this from the perspective of hindsight in our respective hometowns. But until then, we will continue to hopefully meet folks out there on the streets and around the periphery of WWDC. And Manton, I will talk to you next week.
All right. See you.